appreciate you, Jedi Roll. You okay. Johnny Tai again today. So it's a trend. It's happening a lot now. Okay, let's just note that for the record. Okay, we have an amazing show for you guys. There's 1.5 million stories in here that I love because they're fascinating, including the kind of coup in Venezuela, which is in the second hour.
Oh, not as interesting in the second hour.
Okay. That's because he's not in it.
Totally kidding.
Okay.
Anna's gonna kill me.
They're throwing random grenades at the Supreme Court in Venezuela.
Yeah.
Like from a helicopter. It is so bizarre.
Not rhetorical bombs.
Yeah.
But bombs.
Literal. But it's not a coup. It's kind of a coup, but not really.
It's kind of chaos.
It's fascinating. And then that malware attack, another one hits Ukraine. There's something afoot, man. I mean, like, first of all, everyone knows that, right? But second of all, as usual, I have an interesting theory on it. I think there's some chance that it's a false flag operation. False wear operation. All right, now I'll explain.
Mal flag.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I can go on and on about how much I love the stories. He said we're going to do them, but I will leave you with this one last thing. If the very last story in this 2-hour show is awesome. It's bananas.
I don't know which one it is.
It's the one about the financial advice. I don't know. I think it's as funny as it gets.
We had a little argument in the production meeting about that. I'm not buying it.
Of course, it's contrary in this guy with everything. Okay, listen, don't miss that one. Now, luckily, if you're a member, you can fast forward to that and just skip John. Just playing. I'm playing, okay.
My mom's at home like, oh, good.
Finally, for once, I get to fast forward through this guy's life. Anyways, tynetwork.com/join, because there's a very rare opportunity. We do it every 5 years or so, where we're giving a free trial. So you get a whole month's worth of TYT membership for free. But remember to use promo code FREETYT, because I did see someone on Twitter flip out for 1 second. Like, they were like, oh my God, it still says $10 a month. No, I know. Put the promo code FREETYT in where it says to put the promo code in. TYTnetwork.com/join. Okay, go.
Oh, okay. I thought they already skipped this part. Anyway, the passage of the Senate health care bill is still very much up in the air. It's been postponed, as you know, from watching the show. But right now, Donald Trump is stepping in. And some people, some of his supporters, believe that he could be an important part of brokering some kind of deal. He certainly seems to have a lot of confidence in his deal-making abilities. And yet, in this video, we're going to break down some of the reasons why he might not be much use for them. First, we have some video from today's roundtable. Here, you're going to see Trump talking about the possible passage of this bill. And I want you to evaluate, as you listen to this, how confident he sounds.
We're going to try and solve the problem. So I invited all of you, and I think we have either 52 out of 52 or 50 out of 52. And John, either one is pretty good, I think, as a percentage. So we're going to talk and we're going to see what we can do. We're getting very close. But for the country, we have to have health care. And it can't be Obamacare, which is melting down. The other side is saying all sorts of things before they even knew what the bill was. This will be great if we get it done. And if we don't get it done, it's just going to be something that we're not going to like. And that's okay. And I understand that very well.
We're either going to get it done or we're not. And then we won't like that.
What? He seems as confused as a cameraman.
Yeah, exactly. The camera's like, who am I supposed to be on? And so there he said that it just can't be Obamacare, it's melting down. And another portion he said it's dying, it's dead, it would die later today if we didn't stop it from dying. And he said once again, he said, I think we're either going to get very close or maybe we can pass it. And I know that I'm hypercritical of him. But when he says, I think we're going to get very close, he doesn't seem to understand that that means it wouldn't become law. Like, he thinks that like you get most of it if you get very close. No, you get none of it. You get nothing, you lose.
Yeah, so there is another stunning part of this get together. It's actually two more, but along the theme of how little Trump knows. This is amazing. Look, even if you're a Trump supporter, and I think you're beginning to get a sense of it. I saw him on TV there at this thing, right? And there was no volume on. And I keep always thinking, like, what would a person in the middle of Kansas think, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that even the guy in the middle of Kansas looking at that TV going, oh no, what's he saying now, right? So in the middle of that meeting, I'll tell you, the Republicans explained to him about the tax break for the wealthy and how you know, opponents of the bill are beating them up on it, saying, hey, this is just a giant tax cut for the rich. And Trump doesn't understand it. That's a huge part of the bill that anybody would concede it. You're Republican, it doesn't matter. It's of course a huge part of the bill. I think it is the whole point of the why they have been attacking Obamacare all along, can't wait to repeal it. Certainly a lot of the Republican donors feel that way, and they've made that very clear. Trump then responds, oh no, we're gonna do tax reform later. We're talking about healthcare now. No, they're like, no wait, we're talking about the tax cuts in healthcare reform. And he just doesn't understand it.
Yeah.
So that solves a couple of things for you guys. He is, you know how they used to say about Obama, the Obama supporters, they'd say, oh, he's playing three-dimensional chess and you simpletons can't understand it. Trump is not even playing one-dimensional chess. Okay, like there's some theories like, oh, he sent that tweet as a distraction, as a diss, as a strategy to do X or Y. There's no strategy on anything. He doesn't understand the most fundamental parts of giant bills that his presidency hinges on.
Yeah.
He said that he would get rid of Obamacare and that he would replace it with this magical thing that lowered your rates but gave you better health insurance and covered everybody while saving the country. Like, no such thing obviously exists, and this certainly isn't it. But he doesn't even know what's in this bill. So the other Republicans are made uncomfortable in the meeting. They're like, oh my God, he doesn't know anything. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know anything.
Well, look, he could know. The only way that he's going to learn the details of this legislation is if John Oliver runs another ad during Fox and Friends. Because honestly, like, we know he watches hours of TV. It's complex to understand. I mean, we talk about this bill every day, but we spent one day in particular, as soon as the Senate bill came out, breaking down the major, you know, stipulations of it. And that's compressing so much information from so many different sources to try to sketch out the broad strokes of it. He's not even gonna get into those broad strokes, let alone the specifics. And so he's simultaneously applauding this bill that he's demonstrated no understanding of, that's very similar to the House bill that he celebrated when it passed, but then started attacking as being heartless and too cruel and needed major changes, and is saying that he's massively engaged on the passage of this one while at the same time providing no evidence that he understands what is in it, and saying that if it doesn't pass, that will be okay. So if you're a Republican senator right now, and theoretically you're thinking, okay, man, if we don't pass this, that could be bad for me. If we do pass it, I could lose my reelection fight. And then you're looking to that bozo as your big, powerful ally. I would have no confidence whatsoever. And so when he does these meetings, that has got to be hurting their efforts.
Here's another quote from the New York Times. When asked by reporters clustered on the blacktop outside of the West Wing if Mr. Trump had command of the details of the negotiations, Mr. McConnell ignored the question and smiled blandly. In other words, of course I'm not gonna answer that question, and of course he doesn't have command of the details. What are we talking about, details?
Yeah.
He doesn't even know the biggest part of the bill. And so John, good point. I mean, it's harder to rally political allies to your side if those political allies have no confidence that you even understood what you rallied people to.
Yeah.
And hence, what are the consequences of that? And if I cross you, will you even remember it? If I support you, will you remember it? Or will you lie about it the next day? Yeah. You know,
or in the case, I mean, look, he was really happy about the House bill supposedly, and then he started attacking it. So if you're a Republican senator, you have to consider the possibility that if you wager your career on this bill, that in the midterms he might attack you for it.
No, you know, we used to say like that he's a third grader. It's like talking to a third grader because that's the level of language that he uses. That's according to actual analysis. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, I've got to lower it all the way down to a 3-year-old because I can talk to a third grader and have him understand things, and we can mm-hmm. go back and forth, no problem. It's like talking to a 3-year-old and like, do we have a deal? Mm-hmm. And a deal, hey, go deal.
But they don't know.
But they don't know. They don't know what
they
deal
just
means.
Want juice. Yeah, right. That's a good point.
It is okay. So but then, along these lines, he sends his PAC to attack Dean Heller.
Yeah.
So who is the Republican senator from Nevada, who is among the vulnerable Republican senators, and they start attacking him. Mitch McConnell gets irate over it. He calls the White House and says that move is, quote, beyond stupid.
Yeah. Then he smiled blandly.
So then they're like, oh, we're not supposed to attack that senator. Okay, and then they reel it back in. By the way, meanwhile, pretty much completely admitting that they are not an independent expenditure.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Like, everybody acknowledges that they contacted Donald Trump. Donald Trump okayed going after Heller with this multi-million dollar ad buy when they're not supposed to be able to do that. Like, how is this operating so? I mean, not that he's going to investigate or the Republicans in the Senate or House are going to investigate, but it has become even more blatant and out there than it was before.
Yeah,
but having
the super PACs or any PAC coordinate with a candidate or a super PAC coordinate with a candidate is against the law, right? Mm-hmm. So they said, no, it's okay though because it's an independent expenditure. We're not coordinating. We're totally independent. That's why it says independent expenditure. Quote from the New York Times: the move against Mr. Heller had the blessing of the White House, according to an official with America First.
Yeah.
That's the PAC saying, yeah, we called the White House, we coordinated with them, they told us to attack that senator.
Yeah.
Why are they, how is that not an immediate investigation?
I don't know. He's also holding a fundraiser for his campaign at one of his hotels, I believe, in the next couple days. So his campaign will make money, sure, but his hotel will also make money. So he gets it coming and going. But I'm glad that we pointed out the Heller thing, because you have two areas of Trump here. You have the area where he's not helping them and doesn't understand what's going on and won't be able to help facilitate a deal. Because look, if he doesn't understand what's in the bill, he is not going to understand what Heller needs in the bill, or what Susan Collins needs, or Rand Paul, or Ted Cruz. Often needs that work at cross purposes. He's not going to get all of that. But that's one thing. It's another thing to then specifically start targeting vulnerable Republicans almost on day one over this bill, potentially pissing them off and losing their support as well.
So now you might do that if you had to twist arms. But I think what McConnell is saying to him is, hey, Donnie boy, we're going to let a couple of the vulnerable Republicans vote against the bill, like very likely Susan Collins and Dean Heller, so that they could pretend to be against the bill so they could win their election. But meanwhile, we pass it anyway. That is a very common political move. But try explaining that to a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
So when he goes, okay, now goo goo, then gaga. Okay, goo goo gaga? Okay. When do I get juice?
Deal. Yeah. Well,
he just doesn't understand it. He doesn't get like, oh, we don't need Heller. We only need 50 votes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not supposed to attack that guy. That doesn't serve any purpose. Like if I pressure the four conservatives like Cruz and Rand Paul and ran ads against them, that might serve a purpose.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's like, okay, but you're hurting my head. Where is the F in juice?
And as Susan Collins just pointed out, I mean, he is the first president without either any political or military experience. And she sort of pitched it as, well, he's going to have to, you know, work a little bit harder to catch up. But what she's saying is this is a guy who doesn't understand anything about what's going on. And I mean, we had this big talk about competency during the primary and the general election, and whether someone's emotionally ready for the presidency, whether they have any experience that can be applied to it. And this is a reminder day by day. It might help us in this particular case, but we should recognize that like where someone is at on the ideological spectrum is not the only important variable for how they will govern as president. There are a lot of other important things. Government is complicated. Not all of it can be easily torn down into dueling ideologies. You need to have someone who understands at least something about human nature, something about political institutions, if you're going to have a country that can survive to the next presidency.
That's why, you know, people say, oh, Pence is no better. That's ideologically totally true. In some ways worse, and he's craftier, and maybe he'll get more things done. I understand all that. I want Pence out of the pulpit and on the mound immediately, because this fool, this Donald Trump idiot, could get us into a war with, I keep thinking North Korea is the most volatile area and the one he could most blunder into. And then we've lost several hundred thousand civilians, if not millions of civilians, before we know what happened, before he can get his juice break. So we got to get him out of there, okay, for the sake of the country. Now, again, that's not up to us. He won the election. The only thing is, if the investigations show that he made a deal with the Russians, that's the only way to get him out. There's no fantasy world.
I heard on Fox that's not a crime.
Yeah, there's no fantasy world where he steps down because because he's a danger to the world. That just doesn't exist. That's not a law.
Yeah.
And there's no fantasy world where he's replaced by someone other than Mike Pence. But we got to get him out. You know how stupid I think he is. I think I'm the standard bearer for, like, if this is a spectrum, I'm on the very end of the spectrum for my respect for his intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. Like, every once in a while people are like, but yeah, Cenk, now you're going overboard. No, there is no going overboard with how stupid he is. But today, I went even further out on that spectrum. If you don't know that there are tax breaks for the wealthy in this bill, you don't know shit. You don't know anything. Anything. A danger to the whole effing world, man. Like, that guy who doesn't know that, you think he knows anything about the intricacies of North Korea? That if we get into some sort of, you know, conflict with North Korea, that he's going to have the mental capacity to make one right decision, let alone the dozens he'd have to make?
You can get proof. Just Google the worst debate answer in history, and I break down him talking about the nuclear triad. He doesn't know anything. Yeah. He doesn't know as much as I just said in that sentence.
We were so close to a nuclear showdown in the Cuban Missile Crisis. And some people wanted it in the US government, a lot of people in the US government wanted us to go in that direction. And JFK barely avoided it by threading a needle. Mm-hmm. This guy thread a needle? Are you kidding me? No capacity whatsoever. And look, some libs might now start to feel kind of bad for him because he's so unintelligent that he's like borders on some mental deficiency, like literally. So you start to feel bad for him. He's slow. He's whatever, right? He's not even on slow. He's on rewind. But you can't feel bad for him. You got to feel bad for the rest of him because he's in charge. We'll feel bad for him after we get him treatment. But in the meanwhile, we got to get him out. He's unbelievable danger to the world. Okay. Anyway, let's hope he did a deal with the Russians. Okay. Mm. All right, next?
We should probably take our first break, but when we come back, there's been a lot of Republican complaining about the way Democrats are fighting back against the potential Senate Republican healthcare bill, and we're going to break down who actually has the facts behind them.
Back on the Young Turks, Cenk and John with you guys. I always think that has a nice ring to it. Cenk and John on 100.3 on the radio in the mornings, and then you ring a cowbell.
That's true, and a baby cries. It's good, but I think John and Cenk.
Oh, that's a little better. Okay,
flows.
I hear you.
Yeah. Okay. A little better. Okay. It flows right on into unemployment.
Which we have a Republican congressman talking about in a minute.
We do.
Okay, that's a great story. Okay.
Segway.
Socialist worker writes in, his staff needs to put on a fake cable news program so Trump will watch and learn actual policy. It's the only format he understands. You know what? Now, I meant to say this earlier, putting two and two together. You're right, John, he doesn't know any policy because the only thing he gets news from is cable news. So he knows nothing, right? But it's worse than that. He watches mainly Fox News, so he has no idea of any of the critiques of his bill.
Well, they're not even covering it. Like generally in primetime and on their front page, they're not talking about it. Even after the CBO report, they were talking about Obama's vacation. All the other main networks are covering the healthcare bill. That's the big story. They're mostly not.
Yeah, because it's polling at 29%, so they don't want to cover anything that's polling badly for them. Yeah, don't give oxygen to a bad story. Just pass it. Make sure the tax cuts go to the rich, but never ever say that on air because Donald Trump is watching and he might accidentally find out what's in the bill.
What we need is we need fans to cut together from clips of Fox and Friends, Steve Doocy and whoever his co-hosts are explaining the healthcare bill. Just cut them saying it, and I think that he might listen.
Okay, and Michael Ritchie writes, and I also think Trump is mentally disabled. Don't forget that Roger Stone was the first and last person to bring up Alzheimer's. Roger Stone's very, very close to him, and he did bring up Alzheimer's, and then was like, oh, that's what they're gonna charge him with, and then left. So I don't know. I had a theory on that, but anyways. You know what, let me read one last thing. It's from the YouTube Super Chat. Dumb writes in, TYT and Majority Report are great shows. I'm a jewelry reporter, Sam Cedar's show. It's also part of the TUIT network. And I don't know if I'm happy to receive a compliment from Dum 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 Dum. But I do appreciate you participating in Super Chat. Okay.
I think it counts as a neg at that point.
All right, what's next?
Anyway, okay, more on the healthcare bill. Opponents of the Trump care bill have repeatedly hammered home some of what we believe will be the worst effects if the bill becomes a law. And so far, a lot of Republicans and conservative commentators are not happy about it. We're going to catch you up on some of the critiques of the bill. Let's see if you recognize these faces.
Medicaid is the program in this country that provides health insurance to 1 in 5 Americans, to 30 million kids, to nearly 2 out of every 3 people in a nursing home. These cuts are blood money. People will die. Let's be very clear. Senate Republicans are paying for tax cuts for the wealthy with American lives.
What the Republican proposal does is throw 23 million Americans off of health insurance. What Harvard University, what a part of Harvard University, and the scientists there determined is when you throw 23 million people off of health insurance, people with cancer, people with heart disease, people with diabetes, thousands of people will die. I wish I didn't have to say it. This is not me. This is study after study making this point. It is common sense. If you have cancer, and your insurance is taken away from you, there is a likelihood you will die, and certainly a likelihood that you will become much sicker than you are today. That's the facts.
So there you see Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. We've said much the same thing for a very long time here on the program. And we're going to get back to the facts underlying those claims in just a little bit. But as I alluded to in the intro, Republicans don't like when you point out what their bill will do. And so it's led to website articles like this, if you could bring up the first one. Top Democrats say Americans will, quote, die from Obamacare overhaul. Bring up another one from the Daily Caller targeting Bernie Sanders. We're freaking out over the fact that 22 million will lose their health insurance. Finally, Newt Gingrich, Democrats lying to save Obamacare. And it hasn't stopped. So we also have Julie Banderas, anchor for Fox. You'll see her in this clip.
I want to first of all talk about what the Democrats have done, because they have scared the bejesus out of a lot of Americans and rural Americans, basically saying millions of people, tens of millions of people are going to lose their insurance. People are going to die. You know, I got the CBO report right here. It's 49 pages long, and I read it. I don't know if the American people have read it.
Sure.
But I want to tell you something that it says, because it talks about the millions of people that potentially will be uninsured under the GOP plan. And according to this, it is estimated that in 2018, 15 million more people would be uninsured under this legislation than under the current law, primarily. And I want to emphasize that word primarily, because the penalty for not having insurance would be eliminated.
And at the same time, the subsidies that would make it affordable will also be eliminated. So she's going to focus on the part, obviously, that she likes. But there, we're being unfair by focusing on the deaths that are likely to result on the people who be thrown off their health insurance.
First, let's note for the record that Banderas is a news anchor for Fox News. She's not an opinion host. She's like Hannity will say, hey, look, I do commentary night. And I think that's actually fair. Now they've taken away fair and balanced. Okay, good. At least you're not lying anymore. It's a conservative news station, right? Mm-hmm. But they still pretend that their news anchors do straight news. And here she is like, oh my God, scaring those dastardly Democrats, scaring the bejesus out of people, saying that if you lose your health insurance, you might die. Of course you could. So, okay, other than common sense, let's begin to break it down. So, part of their attack against Sanders, Warren, Democrats is, you know, look at how uncivil that they're being. You know, they're talking about people dying. That's you can't do that. You know, you're getting people all riled up. Okay, look, if you're talking about free college, this is a super important issue, but there's no one's life on the line. Generally speaking, so if you stretch that to people who are dying, that's wrong, right? Okay, that's not the right way to go. And I can give you 1,000 obvious examples. But there are a couple of issues that the government deals with that are definitely, clearly life and death. Now, it doesn't mean that there is a right and wrong decision, and that's why we debate these things. And we have a strong opinion in one direction. But if you're talking about war, for example, and you say, well, because of that, people will die, Well, that's literally true.
You're being hysterical, Nick.
Right.
You're being hyperbolic.
Like, so it's like those protesters for the Vietnam War. So like, if we go to Vietnam, thousands will die. Oh, you're being hysterical. Like, you're going to go into the middle of the jungle and have a war, and you think people are going to die? Of course, that's what happens in a war. And if you don't have healthcare and then you get sick, you have, like, for example, cancer, will you die? Yeah, that's kind of how cancer works.
Yeah. I think you might, in this case, be even being too fair to her, because look, she did focus on the claims about the deaths, but she also said that she didn't like that we were talking about all the people who would just lose the health insurance, regardless of whether they die or not, that we're pointing out that 22 million will lose their insurance. Well, that wasn't, it's not like Bernie Sanders wrote that report, the CBO wrote that report. And Donald Trump, in the section we were showing earlier, was like, these Democrats are making all these claims about the bill before they've even seen it. Yeah, we make correct predictions about what would be based, what would be in the bill based on your past comments. And it's very similar to the House bill. The estimates of how many will lose their health insurance are almost identical. So we can talk about that at this point. But a lot of people are saying that it's not based on anything. It's just lies. Bernie Sanders is exaggerating. Elizabeth Warren exaggerating. So let's go over some of the evidence. PolitiFact looked into this, including reaching out to the Bernie Sanders campaign about the studies he talked about in the video you just saw. And one of them, by the Harvard Center for American Progress, projected an additional 217,000 deaths over the next decade, or 21,700 per year. The second piece of evidence estimated that there would be almost 44,000 deaths annually due to the GOP's health policy changes. And that initial estimate, by the way, was based off of a smaller number of people being thrown off their health insurance than the CBO has calculated. So it's actually going to be worse than that if you were to update it based on the new information. And they conclude saying, we found at least 7 academic papers that detected a link between securing health insurance and a decline in mortality, which sort of makes sense even without citations, but I'm glad that they have it. And furthermore, we found ample evidence in the academic literature to suggest that legislation on the scale of the House bill would produce, quote, thousands of additional deaths, which means that you can then claim that this will cause thousands of deaths.
And some of those studies looked into what happened when states didn't sign up for the Medicaid expansion, as compared to states who did. And there's a lot of ways to do those studies, and almost all of them came to the conclusion is, well, the people who didn't sign, the states that didn't sign up for Medicaid, X number of people didn't have insurance, and of those, a certain percentage got sick. And when they did, and it's not sick like I twisted my ankle and went to the emergency room, got sick with a condition that needs to be treated regularly, and they didn't get that treatment because they didn't have insurance, and yes, they in fact died.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how healthcare works. So is there a scenario in which people have less insurance, so more of them live? That makes no sense. How could they?
Medical malpractice, I guess.
You know, so of course more people will die. So it's to say that it's, look, but PolitiFact, I both want to give them credit in this. Overall, I love that what they do and that they exist, but they are also frustrating on some counts. Mm-hmm. So they look at the facts, wonderful. We love that part. We're not right wingers, hate it when you look into facts. So we like it. We want you to look into facts even more, okay? Hold everybody accountable. And then when they mention that for the two Harvard professors cited by Bernie Sanders' staff when they inquired further were not peer-reviewed studies, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. Okay, that's a data point. And the right wingers would dismiss that immediately, like peer-reviewed, yeah. Who cares? That's science anyway.
Well, they wouldn't understand what it means.
But. Yeah, but I would say that's an interesting and important data point. Now, here's the part that drives me crazy about PolitiFact. They have to be balanced because they can't always rule against Republicans. Otherwise, they have a liberal bias. Just give us the facts. So it turns out, by the way, on the peer-reviewed or not, those articles, the PolitiFact later says in a parenthesis buried in the article, we're quoting studies that were peer-reviewed. Mm-hmm. Then don't say that in the beginning.
And 5 of the 7 were also themselves just peer-reviewed.
Yeah, and so now we have to PolitiFact. Okay, anyway. Yeah,
they're doing analysis based off of data that comes from studies that were peer-reviewed.
Yes, okay, fine. Let's put that nitpicking aside, if you want to call it nitpicking. At the end, their conclusion is what Bernie Sanders said is mostly true. No, you just told us that it was totally true. So even the two studies mm-hmm. that they cited where it was equivocal evidence, they reached out to the authors and the authors said, no, the other studies are right. Probably thousands will die, right? No, I'm not sure that they confirmed that other thousands would die, but they confirmed the other studies. Mm-hmm. So they had no dissent. It's not mostly true. The only reason they call it mostly true is balance. I have to balance it. If I keep saying that liberals are completely true and right wingers are making up stuff, I'll get accused of bias. So no. Do your job. Polita fact. According to the facts you gave in the article, Sanders' statement was not 99% true. It was 1,000,000,000% true. Now, PolitiFact would look at that and go, there is no such thing as 1,000,000,000% true. So I'm going to rate his statement mostly true.
I think you should start a website. It's PolitiFact Fact, where you fact checked each PolitiFact article. And then you evaluate how accurate they are. By the way, one last thing, though. So you just saw Fox there saying, like, oh, you're saying people are going to die. That's irresponsible, even though the evidence is there that it's true. Do you remember, some of you are too young, do you remember when we were debating Obamacare in the first place, what right wingers were saying about Obamacare and what it would do? They weren't pointing to peer-reviewed studies of how many people would die. They were saying freedom would die, America would die. There was a guy with a flag saying, if they're going to kill America, they're going to have to get through me. And that was played on Fox News. I don't know if he was peer-reviewed. I don't think they looked into it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. We're parsing whether Bernie Sanders, backed up by almost every study, can be called mostly true or completely true. Mm-hmm. They made up things about death panels. Just made them up.
Yeah, and still say it.
And to this day say it, right? Yeah. But everybody in the establishment press has to find some sort of balance.
Yeah.
PolitiFact. Fact. Don't worry about it. If you're a PolitiBalance, then maybe you should do this.
Yeah.
If you're PolitiFact, you should just look at the facts and call it like it is.
Exactly. Get the real truth at politifactfact.com. Anyway, I got a quick one for you right here. The vote on the Senate healthcare bill has been pushed back until after a short recess, which under normal circumstances means that this would be an opportunity for Americans from around the country to let their senators know what they think about this bill and whether it should be passed by attending town halls. But we don't live in normal times, and there will be no town halls. In fact, not even just in this recess. Town halls have effectively ended at this point because people were apparently providing too much democracy to these senators. Let's take a look at this infographic that was put together. It's going to show you the number of town halls for Republican congressional Republicans per month. And you're seeing there, 31, 38 in March, up to 64 in April, which sounds good. I mean, theoretically, there are hundreds of Republican representatives, and you could hold more than one a month. So that number is still probably pretty small. But look at it dropping off as the pressure turns up on them when the conversation switches to healthcare reform. It drops to almost a third in May, then it halves again in June, and the entire month of July, where they have the end of one recess and the beginning of another, has two town halls for hundreds of Republicans when the country is in an uproar about a massive piece of legislation that we know is hated by most of the country. Two town halls.
Yeah. So you might be surprised that I'm slightly mixed on this story. I'll tell you why. Look, Indivisible, it's not just them, but largely them, has done a great job of rallying people to town halls. I think they started out wonderful. I'll leave aside some of their issues today. But anyway, but they rallied people and they got people to the town halls. So, and it provided for a great video. And if you're a Republican politician, you don't want that video out there, people yelling at you. And you know what's coming. You know the other side is organized well. By the way, you did the same thing during Obamacare, so you know how that goes. Mm-hmm. So you think, why the hell would I want to go?
And I mean, theoretically, if the facts are on your side, you could answer people's concerns.
Exactly. So that's why I say I'm slightly mixed. Now, overall, should they go? Of course, and I'll tell you why. If you have BS talking points, you don't want to go anywhere near those town halls. Okay. By the way, I also wouldn't go to those town halls if I thought the people were fake. What I mean by fake is if they were paid to attend there, etc. But if they're your real constituents, they were rallied by someone you consider an opponent to show up there, but they are actually your constituents. And they are earnest, that they're not, they're actually real concerned citizens. And you think you're right, of course you should show up. And you should spend hours there with people. And you know what people would do? They would appreciate it if you actually spent all that time with them. And you wouldn't leave. You wouldn't leave for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours until you answer people's questions and went back and forth and back and forth and consistently saying to them, look, we're not all going to agree, but here's why I did it. Here's why I think your healthcare is going to be better. Here's why I think you're going to pay less. Here's why I think you're going to get more coverage. Here's why I think your mom is going to be covered. Your uncle and your aunt's going to be covered. Mm-hmm. And so by the end, they might respect you and think, oh, we have a difference of opinion. He is trying to get to the right goal, which is more coverage and cheaper and more affordable and accessible. He just has a different opinion on it. Now, the reason that we're down to two town halls is because the Republicans don't think that, and they know it. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to go and talk to your real constituents and tell them, no. The richest people in the country need another $800 billion tax break. That's why less of you will be covered. Your mom might not be covered. If you're above the age of 60, you might pay four times as much and get less coverage. That is an indefensible position. Yeah. So the one place they do show up is to the fundraisers.
They hang out with the Koch brothers.
Because that is where they are very well received. Mm-hmm. That's where the crowd cheers and goes, nice job, job well done. Hurrah for Congressman X, who gave us exactly what we paid for.
Exactly. And while I think it makes a lot of sense to focus on what they're going to be doing right now when the fate of the ACA is sort of up in the air, this is a bigger problem than just that. Of the 52 Republicans in the Senate, 34 have not held a single town hall this entire year on any topic when anything was in the news. They just don't care. And now, that doesn't mean they weren't meeting with people, as Cenk pointed out. They're meeting with people. They're just a different class of people.
Yeah, I have a good idea on what we should do. Let me work on it and then and get back to you guys. There's a comparison I'd love to do. Anyway, so these guys, look, some people criticize me saying you're lowering the trust that people have in government. So as liberals, we should be in favor of government. So stop disparaging government officials. No deal. Okay. I believe in the right size government, which is whatever our democracy, if we had one, would ask for and demand, right? And there is, I don't want a big government if it leads to endless wars. I don't want a big government if it leads to subsidies for the richest companies in the world. What I want is a government that actually works for us. So in order to do that, I have to point out that yes, these guys work for their donors. There is one way to fix that. It's not to avoid the problem. It's not to stop talking about the problem. It's to actually fix the problem. Okay, so you know what's coming next, right? Wolf-pack.com. Okay, you go fix the problem. And that's the right way to do it. It has in human history, it has never helped to say, well, that is a big problem. I bet it'll go away if we stop talking about it. Doesn't usually work with disease or anything else, or in this case, the virus of corruption. You want to take another break?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay, let's take a break. And you're going to be shocked at the next thing as well, which is Donald Trump does something creepy with a woman that he finds attractive. And he does it on the international stage. Oh boy, brace for impact.
He always means.
All right, we're back apparently. So that
and the guy at the movie talking when the music cuts out.
Yeah, all right. Back on the Young Turks. Cenk and John, or John and Cenk.
we should have a poll.
No.
Cenk and John, or John and Cenk.
Wrong. There will be no poll. There will be no democracy on that one. Bill O'Falafel writes in on YouTube Super Chat. Thanks, Mr. Uger, for bringing some clarity to the establishment Democratic candidates. When they go low, we get the facts and kneecap them. But I do like how Bill O'Falafel is very polite. I got a Mr. Uger on that. Anyway,
he's going a bit low with the name, but yeah.
That's true.
Well earned.
Hashtag TYT live now on Twitter. Sarah Elizabeth writes, if this bill is passed, welcome to a country of GoFundMes. It's all people will be able to do to survive. And Diva Athen, otherwise known as J.R. Jackson, writes in, they're on another recess? WTF, how many days a year do these clowns actually work? I say J.R. because that's his main pet peeve. It drives him nuts that they work like 2 to 3 months a year.
Although now it kind of seems like a nice reprieve.
Yeah. Okay, well, one thing that I told the members yesterday, but I wanted to tell you guys because it's such a good, fun point that Edwin made. The guy that I was telling you about yesterday, Jay Sekulow, the Trump lawyer who did that nonprofit charity.
Yeah, this is a good Christian.
Where his family took in $60 million. There's no air quotes on that. They actually did. From poor Christians who believed in them. That's the guy who I yelled at in an interview a long time ago that actually was in the movie Mad as Hell, where we had that big debate about whether I should have told him to shut up. That's Jay Sekulow, Trump's lawyer.
Wait, is that when you come back and you talk to Anna and you said he should have had a really?
That's the one where I said he deserves a tall glass of shut up juice.
What was he in the news for?
He's been around doing nonsense. He gets in the news so he could raise money from poor Christians. And so he can buy his
jet. There are five people in Washington, D.C., I think. That's it. The same names just pop up decade after decade.
Right. All right, let's keep going.
Okay, well, before we jump back into it, we do want to remind you, as we've been doing every week, and this number, like the graphic is nice and bright and happy, but the reality underlying it is not. If we could bring up graphic 13, a reminder that it's been 1,049 days since it became clear that there were lethal implications to the water crisis, the water situation at that point. In Flint, that number continues to go up every time we update you on it. The situation does not continue to improve, certainly not at the pace that is deserved.
And 6 months into Donald Trump's presidency, at least, and ISIS is still around. It's weird.
That's true.
I thought they were going to be gone immediately.
And if he has even mentioned Flint, I did not see it.
Yeah, of course not. All right, what's next?
Okay. Donald Trump was on an Oval Office phone call with the new Prime Minister of Ireland. It's an island. I'm gonna restart that just in case. We're gonna do a second take. Donald Trump was on a phone call with the new Prime Minister of Ireland when something caught his eye. Let's watch.
We have a lot of your Irish press watching us. They're just now leaving the room. And where are you from? Go ahead, come here. Where are you from? We have all of this beautiful Irish press. Where are you from?
I'm from RTE News. The Taoiseach will know me. Okay. Katrina Perry.
Katrina Perry. She has a nice smile on her face, so I bet she treats you well.
This is Katrina Perry. She is, we're going to show you the picture, a reporter with RTE for a number of years, was just trying to leave the room when she was pulled aside by him. She tweeted a video of the bizarre moment when President Donald Trump called me over during his call with the leader there. And I love that she also added him on that. And by the way, so that was what she posted on Twitter. If we could bring up the Instagram, which I believe she took down, one of the more bizarre moments, being called over in the middle. With hashtag this job, hashtag this town, hashtag there is no hashtag, which says a lot, as hashtags sometimes do.
Okay, so you hit on the thing I really want to talk about, her Instagram account. Seriously, I don't know why she took that down. I hope to God that they're not out there being like, oh, now let's not insult the president just because he pulled you over to stare at you in front of the world and he's a weird creep.
Well,
let's not imply that in any way, shape, or form.
That's true. I mean, there's also the chance that immediately after posting that and once it started to spread, she got about 1,000 rape threats from Donald Trump supporters.
That's also entirely true.
It is the internet, after
all.
None
of those scenarios are good scenarios. Okay, and then I just want to commend her on hashtag there is no hashtag. That's awesome. It should be used more. In fact, come here. I want to tell you how good that hashtag is. Could you imagine? That's the president of the United States, man. Now I know we used to have presidents do much worse behind the scenes, okay? But you're like, he's such a child. The cameras are everywhere. You're calling her over because
he thinks it's charming.
Yeah, he called. He said you have a beautiful Irish press. What is that? She has a really nice smile.
She must treat you well. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. But I know, so some people, Kaylee McElhaney or whatever her name is, she's one of those on CNN or MSNBC, it's all the same thing, that's paid to come out and defend Trump on whatever he says or does, was like, why are you guys claiming that this is sexism? He's just charming. He just likes talking to people. But here's the thing. Donald Trump is not some unknown quantity. We know a lot about him. So if you're that reporter, and you can't tell, but I'm pointing at a picture of her. If you're that reporter and you see him, you know that he's the grab them by the pussy guy.
Oh.
You know all of the things he's said about women, the accusations of sexual harassment and sexual assault, the comments about his daughter. You know all of that. And Donald Trump, you know that she knows all of that. And so you call her over and talk about her beautiful smile. Whether you think you're a creep, and nobody thinks they're a creep, you need to understand that people think you're a creep and you're being creepy.
Well, that's the thing, as usual, not that bright. So even if you thought, oh man, I'd love to hit on her. And look, nobody's policing anybody's thoughts. Okay, people will have their thoughts, and there's no way around that. But if you've already gotten into a lot of political trouble over statements like that, you'd think you'd be savvy enough to say, "Hey, let me not call that woman over because I think she's hot."
Yeah.
Like that's probably not a smart political move to do. Besides which, what am I going to do? Ask her out on a date in the middle of a call with the Irish Prime Minister? And look, the part of those tapes that are underrated, if anything in those tapes was underrated, is when he said, "Oh, I hit on her anyway, even though I know she's married. I try to get her to sleep with me, and I even bought her furniture, but it didn't work." Like that's the kind of classless guy he is.
We've all been there,
right? Could you imagine?
I don't even know why I go to IKEA anymore.
Yeah, you run into a girl at the mall. Does that still happen?
How'd you like a nightstand?
I will buy you a couch. So anyway, she of course was a little freaked out by it, as well she should have, and now we're all freaked out by it.
Exactly. So we leave you with that. Okay, one more story for you. On TYT, many times we've returned to this phenomenon where for a strong conservative, empathy seems to only come as the result of a policy, an issue directly impacting that person. There's no like preemptive empathy, the concern for another person's suffering. It has to affect you for you to understand that. And we have another example of it where this person ends up, a former Republican congressman, ends up being on the right side of an issue, but only because of his own experience. This is a former Republican representative, Jolly, and you're gonna see his comments right here.
And I'm a tale of two patients. Prior to Congress, I lost my doctor. I lost my plan under Obamacare, and it was part by subsidizing those who needed additional coverage. But Lawrence, I'm going to share something with you and the American people tonight that most people probably don't know. Here's the other patient that David Jolly is. On January 4th, I was a former member of Congress, unemployed with no health insurance and a pre-existing condition. And while I ultimately chose a private sector plan, I also knew in 2017 Obamacare provided an exchange that was a safety net that wasn't there before. And to be honest with you, if I had had to rely on it, I knew it was there. And that's why the politics of Obamacare in 2017 are different than 2013. I lost my doctor and I lost my plan in 2013, and I was angry about Obamacare and I ran for Congress. But in 2017, as an unemployed person with a pre-existing condition, I knew Obamacare was there as a safety net if my wife and I needed it.
Is he not merciful? Now.
So there's a couple of angles to this. They all seem much more reasonable after they're out of office.
They do, yeah.
And there's a lot of Republican former congressmen and senators who will say, you know what? Turns out the money in politics is really corrupting. Of course, how come you never said that while you were in office? Well, we know why. And as of course is the same Rick Santorum phenomenon where he said you should be capping malpractice lawsuits at $250,000. His wife then had a back operation that didn't go well. He sued for $500,000. They're like, that's twice your own cap. He said, yeah, but that's my wife.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Dave Jolly going, yeah, but I had a pre-existing condition and I was unemployed. Now, but two buts that go in slightly different directions here. I know Dave Jolly's record pretty well because I moderated a debate between him and Alan Grayson for the Florida Senate seat recently. Mm-hmm. Actually, neither one of them won. That's usually how it goes when I moderate a debate.
Thank you, angel of death.
Actually, here in California, I moderated a debate between 12 different people for a congressional seat, and none of them won.
Anyway. That's some sort of Guinness record, I think.
I think so. Anyway, so he is slightly more moderate Republican. So you know me, I think there are almost no moderate Republicans in the country. But Jolly is slightly more moderate, and he has also complained about the dialing for dollars, and in fact, he partly left office because I'm so tired of calling donors and begging them nonstop. It's like 50 to 70% of your job. So you do have to give him credit for that, and here he is being slightly reasonable again. And then the final part of it is, look, politicians will be politicians. As I saw that, I thought, well, this is good. That's positive that he's admitting that. Plus, it sounds like he might run as a Democrat suit.
Theoretically, yeah.
Right? No, you see what I'm saying? Sometimes you get back in the game by doing these kind of things. And he's also said that Trump should be out of office, etc. And I'm like, which purple district are you going to flip and run as a Democrat on? I'm just curious.
I'm going in a slightly different direction. I do think that his career is what's on his mind, theoretically. But I think he sees an opportunity in media. I mean, I saw that guy on Bill Maher. I think being the Republican who seems sort of moderate, he's still a Republican, hated Obamacare, but he doesn't like Trump, and now he seems reasonable, says interesting things. I think that could get him on the news a couple times.
That is another great point. I mean, you want to get a job. Right now, there is no better way to get a job in media than being an anti-Trump Republican.
Yeah.
Oh, they love you.
Yeah. I should think about it. Anyway. I can pretend, damn it.
Yeah, soon we're going to lose some of you guys. Like, JR has been toying with the idea of being the anti-black black for a while, because that is a guaranteed high-paying job. Mm-hmm. Okay, Fox News at a minimum. It's like, look, if I ever, okay, I don't even want to get into the alternative career paths that different people at TYT are considering. Maybe we'll do a post-game on it. Speaking of which, as we head over to the next hour now, today's postgame will be about healthcare. My healthcare experience today.
Today?
Yes, I went to the doctor's office this morning and had some significant frustrations. Like, I was this close to going, where's the plane?
Oh, God.
Where's the plane? Where's the doctor? Where's the doctor? Anyway, okay. So I'll tell you about it in the postgame. Lucky you, it's free trial month. TYTnetwork.com/join. And enter the promo code FREETYT and get a free month of Young Turks membership. So check that out and check out the postgame today. Thank you, John. And Anna and I will be right back. Every story in the second hour is amazing. And I love the last one. It's the funniest story we've done in a while. So don't miss the second hour. We'll be right back.